Welcome to Faith and Family. I'm your host, Andy Bates. We have a missionary family story to share today, and I'm so excited about sharing missionary family stories on Faith and Family. It's always great for us to get to hear about the servants of God who are going around the world to tell the good news of Jesus, and today we're going to talk with the Beckendorf family, so I hope you can stick around for the whole conversation. I want to say thanks to our underwriter, Concordia University Wisconsin, for supporting this program. You can find out more about Concordia University Wisconsin in the sponsor section on our website, KFUO.org. Look for the CUW logo there, and you can find out more about them. And give them a shout-out. Say thanks for supporting Faith and Family on Worldwide KFUO. Joining me in studio today, the Beckendorf family, Reverend Tim Beckendorf and Lisa and Aaron and Andrew, all joining us, making the trek from Botswana back to the United States and spending some time with us in studio today to talk about their life. So welcome to Worldwide KFUO and Faith and Family, Pastor Tim. Thanks so much for being here today.
Our pleasure. Thank you.
And who do we have next? Aaron? Is this Aaron or Andrew? Aaron, right? Welcome to Faith and Family. Thanks for being our guest today.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And Lisa, Mrs. Beckendorf, thanks so much for being here today.
No, our pleasure.
And over here we have Andrew. Good morning.
Hi.
Thanks for being here today. Well, I can't wait to hear your stories and hear what how God prepared you to serve as a missionary family in Botswana, and then what are the things that you're up to. Let's start with Pastor Beckendorf. Let's talk about your background, where you come from, and what led up to you becoming a pastor and then a missionary as well.
I grew up in Detroit, Michigan. My mom and dad were Lutheran school teachers. I've never been comfortable in the city. I could hardly wait to leave, especially a city like Detroit. After high school, I went to college for 2 years as a cellist. I was a professional musician, sort of, you know, on the track towards that. But in my heart, I always wanted a farm. And so after my second year in college, I knew I didn't really want to pursue that anymore, and I got an opportunity to start farming. And so I went and did that for 14 years. I was a pork producer in southern Minnesota. Never, ever wanted to leave the farm. I literally prayed to die with my boots on, but God had other plans. One year, my pastor had left some literature from the Lutheran Layman's League out about going to do a short-term missionary thing in in Latvia at that time. And there was never room on the teams for me to go. And my pastor kept pushing, saying, you know, are you interested in going? Yeah, I'm interested. I'd be interested. I don't know why he picked me. but then there was an opportunity in Slovakia, and I thought that would be a really neat opportunity. My dad was a historian, and, you know, we grew up during the Cold War and, you know, knowing all about communism, I thought this would be really neat to see Eastern Europe right after the wall had come down. This was in 93. And so I went for on a short-term voluntary project to help rebuild a Lutheran high school there in Tisovec, Slovakia, where I met Lisa. She was teaching there. She'd been there for 2 years. And we got interested in one another, I guess you could say, after a while. At first, it was toleration at best, and because I was just this dumb hick farmer. And I ended up going back for a year to Slovakia. I taught as a volunteer teacher there, teaching English as a second language. And then we came back to the United States. We got married over there during that year, came back to the United States, and back to farming again. And I remember one time telling Lisa, you know, I really don't want to do this anymore. I want to go back to the mission field. But I didn't feel theologically trained well enough to go at that point, and so we talked about going back and finishing college, which I did at Seward Concordia, and then applied to the seminary. I mean, what better theological experience and education can you have? I was accepted to the seminary, and after my first year there, the end of that year, I was in charge of a mission festival and setting up all going to visit the exhibition hall and seek where all the guys were setting up. I started talking with Joe Bowie, who was with Lutheran Bible Translators, and he's a fellow from Liberia. And we just hit it off, and it sounded like, I've always been interested in languages. I loved exegetical work, and so it sounded like something I'd really enjoy doing. That summer, then we went to Crossroads Aurora, which is an event at the service center for LBT, to give an orientation for what service could be like for a missionary with LBT. And then it just progressed from there, and my first call out of the seminary then was to work with Lutheran Bible translators.
Wow. And you ended up serving then, is Botswana your first call?
Botswana is our first call, yep.
Wow. And how long have you been there now?
We've been there for 9 years.
Outstanding. Well, let's talk about Mrs. Beckendorf's background now. Tell us, where did you grow up, and what was your plan? Did you ever plan on being a missionary in Botswana?
No, I didn't. My parents were missionaries in Papua New Guinea, and in fact, my father was a Bible translator, and so I grew up overseas, kind of knowing that, but never knowing what it was like to be in the States. And I always thought that living and being in the States would be interesting. So I kind of made a deal with God that he could do with whatever he wanted with my life, but I didn't want to be a pastor's wife or a missionary's wife. And here I ended up being both.
So you grew up in Papua New Guinea. And when did you come, I think you mentioned when your paths crossed, where did you all meet?
In Slovakia. I was teaching English as a foreign language over there as a short-term missionary when Tim came by with the LLL group to help rebuild the school. And that's where we met. And then eventually he came back again, also on a short-term mission project, and we got married there.
And so you got married in Slovakia?
Yes.
And then, and at that time, then you started realizing that you're marrying a pastor and potential missionary?
No, I was marrying a hog farmer.
Ah.
Pork producer.
Pork producer. And no idea then at this point that you'd be going back out as missionaries?
No, none at all. None whatsoever.
When that plan changed, how did that go for you?
No, by that time it was okay. When we were back here in the States and Tim was back on the farm and I was there with him, it just felt like there was something missing in my life. There was something more that I could be doing. And when Tim first sprung the idea of maybe perhaps going into missions, I was surprised, but also then kind of somewhat relieved because, well, yeah, maybe that's what I've been missing.
So then you made your way to Concordia in Seward, Nebraska, is that right?
Correct.
And then eventually here to Concordia Seminary in St. Louis. And then how did you prepare for your work with Lutheran Bible translators? What was missionary formation like? I know you studied at the seminary, but what was there other training that was involved on either of your either part here that that prepared you for mission work?
Well, actually, after the seminary, yes, we both went to school at the Graduate Institute of Applied Linguistics in Dallas, and that was a very intensive year. Providing you with a linguistic foundation, language planning, all the technical aspects of the work. And then there was a component also about, you know, what it's like living cross-culturally, trying to learn a language, learning a culture from the inside out, that sort of thing.
And speaking of moving from culture to culture, I failed to ask, what was it like moving from Papua New Guinea, and then you were in Slovakia, and then Minnesota, is that right?
Right.
How did you make those transitions? What was it like changing from culture to culture over those times? What were some of the transitions like?
Well, it's hard to say. It's different for everybody, but for me, it was almost kind of disbelief at first. You know, you're a visitor, or at least pretending to be a visitor in your home country, and then it kind of hits you that you're not actually visiting, you're staying, and it's kind of a shock to realize you can't go home again. And going over to Slovakia was much easier, of course, because there I was a visitor, and I was going to be coming back to the States then in a few years at least. So really the shock, the only real culture shock I had was coming from Papua New Guinea to the United States, where I was expected to be at home, but yet I had no idea what this mm-hmm. home was.
And so now going on to the next generation, yeah. and what is life like? You said you've been in Botswana for 9 years now. Well, let's talk to these other Beckendorfs in the room about life. Let's start with Aaron. Aaron, tell us, how old are you, sir?
9 years old.
9 years old. So where were you born?
America.
In America. But where have you spent most of your life?
Botswana.
Yeah. And what do you do as a missionary kid in Botswana? How do you spend most of your time?
Staying at home.
Staying at home? Are you a student? Do you study?
Yeah.
What's your favorite subject?
Science.
What do you love about science?
Chemistry.
Who's your science teacher?
Mom.
Mom. So you study at home?
Yes.
Very good. Very good. And so life in Botswana, is the life that you've known. You've been living there for 9 years, most of your life. What do you do? What do you do for fun?
Play with Legos.
Legos. Very good. Very good. Well, let's also talk with Andrew here. Andrew, how old are you?
7 years old.
7 years old. And where were you born?
America.
America. And been living in Botswana most of your life, huh?
Yeah.
And what do you like to study?
Science.
You like science too?
Yeah.
This is a science household, isn't it? What do you love about science? Anything specific?
Biology.
Biology. So we have a biology major and a chemistry major in the house today. And Andrew, who's your science teacher?
Mom,
yeah. What do you like to do for fun?
Climb trees.
Yeah? Do you have lots of trees where you live in Botswana?
Yeah, but most of them are thorn trees.
Oh, you don't want to climb those, do you?
No.
Well, very good. Well, thanks for sharing with me a little bit, and we'll talk more here in a little bit. So life in Botswana, the boys were born here in the United States, but you live most of the time in Botswana. Tell us about making those transitions as a whole family. What is it like just for, you know, I can picture what it's like as an individual, probably. It has some challenges packing up and moving. But what is it like making that transition as a family?
Lots of luggage. I remember the first time going over with Aaron, he was 5 months old, and I think 3/4 of her luggage was baby stuff, you know, car seat, yeah. And I mean, babies just come with a lot of baggage. but yeah, you know, besides the physical stuff, a lot of unknowns, fear, mm-hmm. you know. We're entrusted with this little child's life, and we don't know what we're getting into, and here we're bringing a little baby along, and, you know, God has richly surrounded us and taken care of us the whole time.
And that's, it's so great to hear, and I think that provides perhaps some encouragement for those who might be considering serving as missionaries. Okay, let's hear from Mom's perspective, making that transition to back over to Botswana with a baby. Now, it sounds like both boys were born here. So did you come back home then for Andrew's birth?
Right. We were back on furlough when Andrew was born.
Aha. Uh-huh. Good timing.
Yeah, it worked out well.
Well, and I guess I shouldn't say home necessarily. Who knows? As you said, we're not really sure where home is. But so what was it like for you as a mother, you know, packing up a baby and moving back to Botswana? Two times.
Well, yeah. Yeah, no, it's a lot like just coming home from a hospital, yeah. Actually. You just take what you need. The only thing that you have there in the back of your mind is, what if this child gets sick? Mm-hmm. Because malaria is pretty common over where we are, and malaria medicine is different for babies. But at some point, you just have to trust the Lord. And we took precautions. Mm-hmm. We did what we could, but then you just have to trust.
And that is much of what you do in your work, is trusting that God will provide. Let's talk about the work that you do in Botswana as Lutheran Bible translators. What was the first thing? Well, even before you got settled in Botswana, did you make any preliminary visits? Had you ever been to Botswana before you got settled in there?
I had visited myself for 2 weeks. The December before we went over there as a family in July of 2005, and I went in December of 2004. So I had a little idea of what the terrain looked like anyway, and, you know, the people and so forth, but, you know, it was just a very brief visit.
And what did you go to, what was your main assignment, what was your main responsibility, what did you go to Botswana specifically focused on?
The first time, or
well, what is your assignment, your work there?
We're there to work with a tribe called the Kwe. They're a group of 5,000 to 6,000 people, and we're to translate portions of the Bible into Kwedam. Kwedam is the language. We're not doing a whole Bible, not a whole New Testament, but a panoramic approach at this point. Mm-hmm. So it's portions of the Old Testament, portions of the New Testament, giving them the broad perspective of the salvation story, you know, the arc of the salvation story, as it were, from Genesis to through the New Testament.
So working with the Kwe people, and that preliminary two-week trip that you made in December, what was the purpose of that trip at that time?
The purpose of that was just to, you know, get my feet into the country, see what it was like, you know, is this a place where a family can live and work? And to meet the Kwe language committee, and that was basically it.
And when you say language committee, who makes up that language committee? Who comprises that?
At that point, there was a non-government organization working with them for economic development, and a component of that was language development. And they were doing some literacy work with the people. They had helped with designing an orthography, an alphabet. And it was these six guys who were on that committee working with the NGO to move their language forward. And they're the ones who requested Lutheran Bible translators to come alongside and do a Bible translation project.
So this was an invitation then to come and do this Bible translation project.
Yes.
So you go for 2 weeks in December and then come back with the whole family in July the following year and start to get settled in. First time feet are on the ground in Botswana. What was that like, Lisa?
It was a little surreal. I mean, growing up in Papua New Guinea, everything was lush and green, and you had lots of rain all year round. And even here in the States, you've got the summer and spring where it's green. And there it was brown and dusty and dry, you know, lots of red sand. And you just kind of wonder, well, my goodness, what have we gotten ourselves into?
Hmm. I remember last year talking about this time, actually talking with Eshni, serving in Botswana, and prayers for rain. And rain came, God provided rain. And so settling down in a place that, as you said, wasn't as green and lush as where you grew up. This was your first, really, your first view of Botswana then, as you're getting settled in. Were you rethinking it as you're getting settled in?
A little shell-shocked, yeah. It kind of almost looked like a moonscape, this one place that we visited, and I thought, oh, there's no way I'm going to survive here. I mean,
we're going to dry out. We're going to die. Yeah.
And it got worse. When I was there in December, you know, the rains had come, it was lush and green, and I told Lisa when I got back, oh, it's beautiful, it's green. I had all these pictures of this green area, and we got there in the wintertime when everything was brown. And then when we went up country to where we were going to be working, which was 13 hours away from where we first landed in the country and stayed for 6 months, we went in September, which is the end of the dry season, and so, I mean, everything has been stripped off the trees by the animals. It is a barren wasteland. And this one particular village called Tsao, I mean, it is, like Lisa said, like a moonscape. And
I almost cried.
I just looked at her face and it was, I thought, oh my goodness, what have we gotten ourselves into now? I can live through this, but Lisa.
So how did you go about getting to know the people in the community. How did you get settled in? Tell us about that getting settled in time. The first, let's talk about, say, your first month there. Where did you settle in?
The first 6 months, we were staying down south by the capital with another missionary family in the same village as a missionary family who they oriented us to the country and got us started with some language learning of the national language, Setswana. And from there, we moved up to Shikawe, the very northern part of the country where we live, and resettled into the country again up there, because there it's like a different country. It's considerably different than down south.
So different part of the country, different culture, different language?
Different cultures, different language, different topography. We're in the best part of the country as far as I'm concerned. We're on the world's largest inland delta. We're on the panhandle of that. So along the river, everything is nice and green and lush. And
a little bit different than the brown and desolate.
You get away from the river just, you know, a couple miles and everything's brown and desolate in the winter too. But, you know, next to the river, everything is nice and green.
So you started to get settled in then, where it's a little bit more lush and a little bit nicer. Tell us about meeting the people, meeting the local people, and what did it take to get to know the local people and the people you're working with?
I'm glad you made the distinction between the local people and those that we work with. The village where we live is made up of a different tribe than the people we work with. We're in the village where we are for communication's sake, for the opportunity to have a highway, or not a highway, but a blacktop road to get to medical care if we need to. Where the people live that we work with, they're deeper into the bush, difficult to reach area across the river, which is only accessible by a pontoon, I always call it a pontoon, but it's a little ferry. So it's generally learning two different cultures, two different people, and these two tribes are both in an antagonistic relationship with one another. So there aren't any Kwe really to speak of in the village where we live.
Were you welcomed into the community? Had they had missionaries like you in the community before? What was it like settling into the community where you live?
It's a big village, so not everybody knew us then. I mean, a lot of people know us now. There was another missionary family there quite a few years earlier that had left. So they did know missionaries. There are white people there, expats, running. There are two lodges along the river there. So we weren't anything unexpected. And we lived right next door to the chief of the village. We rented from his son. So we had a good relationship with the chief's wife. I mean, he wasn't around too much, but we knew the wife pretty well.
I want to hear more about getting settled in. I want to hear from Mom's perspective, too, about getting settled in, and then school at home as well. We need to take a quick break. When we come back from that break, we'll continue talking with the Beckendorf family, serving as Lutheran Bible translators, missionaries in Botswana. So stick around for more Faith and Family right after this on Worldwide KFUO.
Concordia University, Mequon, Wisconsin, overlooks the beautiful shoreline of Lake Michigan. This serene main campus of CUW is just 15 miles north of Milwaukee, with all its vibrant cultural attractions. At Concordia University, Wisconsin, students living by the motto of inspiration in action can choose from 69 undergraduate majors, 14 master degree programs, and doctorates in pharmacy, physical therapy, and nursing practice. For more information or to take a virtual tour, visit cuw.edu.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
Legal Planned Parenthood abortion facilities are being run like dangerous back alley abortion mills. Two nurses went public with appalling conditions at a Planned Parenthood abortion mill in Delaware. It was so bad they quit for fear of losing their nursing licenses. After the publicity, the abortionist, Timothy Livright, was forced to stop practicing medicine in the state. The Delaware Attorney General called him a clear and immediate danger to the public. But that didn't stop Planned Parenthood or this abortionist from hurting women. Planned Parenthood in San Jose, California hired Livright to do abortions there. Clearly, they don't care about women. It's all about the money. The legal abortion industry is harming women in illegal back alley style.
For more information, visit our website at lifeissues.org and stay informed, more informed than you've ever been.
This is a newborn radio station, KFUO.
Those were the first words spoken on KFUO. But before those words could even be broadcast, it took a group of volunteers and supporters to cover the cost of constructing our very first radio facility.
On this occasion, we also wish to express our hearty thanks to all Christians who have given or pledged their contributions toward the erection and upkeep of this station.
Since those historic words, KFUO has relied on supporters to bring us through our first 90 years. And KFUO continues to need your support to move forward into our next. Will you prayerfully consider supporting the worldwide outreach of KFUO with a gift today? For a suggested gift of $90 or more, we'll say thank you with a collector's edition 90th anniversary I Lutheran t-shirt. To give your gift, contact Joni or Mary at 314-996-1512. Thank you for your continued support and prayers for worldwide KFUO, the messenger of good news.
You've discovered worldwide KFUO. Now discover how easy it is to listen to KFUO where you are. Discover our online stream and on-demand programs that allow you to listen where, when, and how you want. Discover how easy it is to listen on your radio, smartphone, Wi-Fi radio, and other listening devices. You've discovered the Christ-centered message that KFUO proclaims daily in both word and song. We are KFUO, the messenger of good news.
Hi, I'm Mark Hawkinson with an invitation for you to join me over the weekday noon hour for Moments of Assurance, your lunchtime spiritual recipe. You'll enjoy encouraging scriptures, a bit of Bible history and trivia, news items, humor, the kids' corner, and more, all mixed in with faith-strengthening sacred music, a blend just right for your midday hour. So join me, won't you? That's Moments of Assurance over the weekday noontime hour here on Worldwide KFUO, the messenger of good news.
Do you have a reason to reach out to us at Worldwide KFUO? Is there a piece of communication you'd like for us to receive? It's not hard to reach us. Our street address is KFUO, 1333 South Kirkwood Road, St. Louis, Missouri, 63122. If you missed it, the street address is found at the bottom of our homepage online, kfuoam.org. Every day we bring you the gospel of Jesus Christ in word and song. Worldwide KFUO, the messenger of good news.
Welcome back to Faith and Family. I'm your host, Andy Bates. We are talking with the Beckendorf family serving as missionaries in Botswana, Lutheran Bible translators, missionaries in Botswana today. And before we went to break, we were talking about getting settled in, life in Botswana and the village that you were getting settled in. We were just starting to talk about the early days getting settled in there. Now, Lisa, tell us from your perspective as a mom, getting settled in the village where you now live and making your life, especially with kids, what was it like? Decisions you have to make, I'm sure, getting settled in, education and, groceries and just in making a life, and not just from a mom's perspective, dad's perspective as well, involved in these things, and your involvement in the mission as well.
Well, I kind of had an advantage because I had a newborn, mm-hmm. and so we were kind of in a transition stage anyhow, going from a couple to a family. And so the changes that came about were not just because we were in a new country. It was just because we were expanding our family. And so the changes all just seemed to flow together and just be a natural extension of having a child now. There weren't a lot of whole new things that needed to be thought about. We ended up having a maid because it was kind of expected, and that probably wouldn't have happened if we were here in the States. But other than that, it was just a natural transition time that any young couple goes through, anyone starting a family.
Now, what is, describe the village where you live and daily life there in the village. What's that like? I know, and we'll talk about education at home here too in a little bit. Just what is daily life like in the village? And I want to hear everybody's perspective on this actually.
Yeah, well, my perspective is quite a bit different from Tim's because I actually stay in the home the whole time and I don't get out and about. I do my work in the morning, you know, the cleaning of the house or laundry or whatever. And then we go right into homeschooling because my kids are now of schooling age. And after that, it's just regular things anybody here in the States would do, just, you know, keeping the house running. It's not anything different than anything that happens here.
Let's talk about what's life like in the village where you live now.
Well, we moved down from the village where we first started living just this last April. And so things are a little bit different now. We're more in the bush than we were before. A little bit more isolated. From my perspective, it's a lot more relaxing. I'm an introvert. I don't like people always around me. And in the village where we first were living, you know, people, little kids would be staring at you from over the fence, you know, watching what this missionary person is doing, you know. The boys and I would be out in the yard playing something and someone was always watching, you know. You just felt like you're in a fishbowl all the time. Now I can walk out the door and nobody's around, nobody's watching me, and I like that. But on a daily basis, I'm going out of from our home village, and I'm working either in a village where they're Quay, or the two guys I work with in translation, Splash and Moses, we are working in the office together. So my experience is much different than Lisa's.
I think for those of us who've never lived outside of American culture and life here in the United States, we're trying to picture what it would be like for life in Botswana, and just typical things that, you know, you mentioned daily chores and laundry and cleaning the home and homeschool and things like that. But what about you know, grocery shopping and entertainment and things like that? You know, families here, I know in our household, we go to the grocery store a couple of times a week because quite often we've made our list, we've gone and gotten our groceries, and then we're home and we realize a day or two later that there are two more things that we need that we forgot. And we seem to go through a lot of milk now that we have a 15-month-old in the house. And so we are making lots of trips to the store for milk. How about all those typical things that, you know, typical Americans, especially Midwesterners, would experience? How does that, what's that like in life in Botswana?
In the village closest to us, there is a little grocery store, but it's not like anything you're used to here, where you have this amazing variety of stuff and everything is always available. You know, if you forget something today, it'll be there tomorrow. We have a lot of the starch there that's the traditional food is cornmeal. So you'll have a rows of cornmeal, you have a row of ketchup, a row of mayonnaise. Vegetables and fruits are few and far between, hard to get. We don't have markets in Botswana like people from Western Africa are used to. They always ask us, well, where are the market people? We don't have markets. We go down south to the village where we get our supplies about every 5 weeks or so, and it's 4 hours south of us. And you got to plan, you know, because when I usually go by myself and I have a list, you know, 2 pages long, and you run all over town, you go to 6 different stores and you still don't find what you need, and you end up, I've had enough of this village, I'm just going home. And so you go back without. Just the availability of stuff. My vehicle is probably the best bush vehicle you can have, but it's old, and so you have to do a lot of maintenance on it and repairs and things, and getting parts is one of the biggest challenges there. Parts and vegetables are the hardest thing to get.
Do a lot of families grow their own vegetables? Is the land favorable for that?
The land that we have, my dad always asked, well, what kind of soil do you have there? And I said, Dad, it's not soil, it's sand. And it's ideal for nematodes and bugs and birds, and it's just really difficult to garden.
Everything that that makes it difficult.
Yeah, yeah. People do try, I mean, you'll have a good garden for about one season, and then the nematodes take over, and you have to find another place to have your garden. It's just a lot of work, and you don't get a lot out of it.
Did you have something to add to that? It's difficult to get groceries or to get a lot of those groceries. So what does a typical meal look like for the folks in the village where you live, and what does a typical meal look like in the Beckendorf household?
In the village, it's cornmeal. They call it maize meal, three times a day. In the morning, it's a very runny porridge with literally a mound of sugar poured into it. And then later on in the day, they'll have something usually with meat. Beef is common and inexpensive. But it'll be the maize meal with some beef and then like a gravy. And that's the normal diet there. For ourselves, we eat a lot of rice and chicken. And then whatever we're able to find for a vegetable, whether it's cabbage or whatever.
Now, being a former pork producer, is pork common in there in Botswana?
No, pork is very difficult to find and very expensive too when you do find it.
So a typical meal what are typical meals like in the Beckendorf household?
Yeah, like Tim said, a lot of rice, a lot of chicken,
yeah,
and variations thereof.
Lots of rice, lots of chicken. Not a lot of vegetables? They're hard to come by.
No, they're very difficult to find.
So what was the first meal you had here in the United States when you came back recently?
Probably something with pork.
Pork and vegetables?
Yeah, salads. We have salads every day. It's wonderful.
Yeah, you find that your body really does crave the green leafy stuff. And so the boys are especially, you go to a restaurant and you give them a choice of what to order and they will choose salads.
Yeah. Do you have a favorite vegetable? Do you have a favorite vegetable, Aaron?
I think spinach.
Spinach. Yeah. That's a good choice. I like spinach. Good green stuff. Andrew, do you have a favorite vegetable to eat when you come back here to the U.S.?
I think either salad or spinach.
Spinach and you like salads. Well, very good. Well, spending some time back here now in the U.S. and how has that gone? Making that turn. How long have you all been back in the U.S.?
We got back here the first part of July.
Uh huh. Very good. So been here for a little while. And now, are there plans to go back then to Botswana and continue? Where are you on the project that you've been working on?
We're about halfway through on our project goal, and so we're planning on going back in early February.
And then you said halfway through? So,
yes.
So what, another 9-10 years there?
No. Theoretically, we could finish up by 2017, if all goes well, which doesn't often happen. But we could be done this next term or certainly the term after that.
And so then you'll have this resource, God's Word selections from Scripture, I know I'm going to mispronounce the name again.
Kwe.
The Kwe people. So you'll have this resource, God's Word, for them. How will that be used in their community?
We're seeing it actually being used right now, which is something we never expected to see in our lifetime. There's a retired pastor from Cape Town, South Africa. He's working at a school in Namibia training indigenous pastors. And he's working with Kwe villages on that side, using our translation in the villages for Bible studies. And on our side in Botswana, there's a young man who grew up in Botswana. His mother lives in the region where we are. She's the one who started that NGO working with economic development. And he has a passion for doing the same thing, raising up Kwe guys to be pastors. And so he uses our Bible translation out in the villages for Bible studies right now. And it's really encouraging, beyond encouraging. It's amazing what's happening through our translation once the people are encountering God through His Word. It's really neat.
Are there other ways that that people could use the resources that are being prepared, or are there other resources that are being prepared by your team in Botswana?
Yeah, oftentimes when you think of Bible translation, you're producing a book. Mm-hmm. But 90% or maybe 85% of the people that we work with are not literate. And so the best way for them to access God's Word is through audio. And we've just seen phenomenal things happen, you know, with these. They're called Audibibles. They're made in South Africa by DeVar. And we learned about them from another project south of us who began using them with their people. And we were given a grant from the LWML, and we used that to purchase a bunch of these Audibibles. And it's the best thing we ever spent money on. We can't keep enough of them out in the villages. They're just phenomenal. I mean, I never expected people to, be impacted so easily. They listen to these things all the time. Game wardens who are walking through the bush, you know, looking for poachers, they're listening to the Kwaidam translation as they're walking through on these Audibibles. People that we've never met, there's a group of Kwe living up in Angola, which we've never visited, but they're hearing God's Word in their language because of these Audibibles. One lady was down in Namibia and visiting family, and they were listening to the Audibible, and she asked if she could take it back with her to her family in Angola. And so people we've never met, mm-hmm. Kwe in Angola, are hearing God's Word through these devices, and they're great.
Earlier, we talked a little bit about what a typical day starts and looks like in the Beckendorf household. Dad goes off to work. How far away are you going to work?
It's usually about 30 to 45 minutes away.
Also not too far away, then. Dad goes off to work, and Mom gets things rolling and keeps running a tight ship at home. You said you start off with chores around the house and then school at home.
Right, we homeschool.
And so you've been homeschooling from the beginning, since education, since they became school age, since boys started school age, they've been homeschooling. Is that common? What are education opportunities for other families in the village where you live?
Well, there is a government school there, which is mm-hmm. for all the national children. And it would have been possible for us to send our children there, but the first 3-4 years there at school is more or less mostly taken up by learning English. And so if we had sent our children there, they probably would have been behind standards here for the U.S. And the teaching methods used over there were not exactly student-friendly. And so we just decided that for our own boys' education, mm-hmm. to keep them up to where they needed to be here in the States, we needed to educate them ourselves.
So you've been homeschooling, and it sounds like the boys really like science. That seems to be their favorite. What's your favorite subject?
Recess?
Yeah.
We do a lot of reading. It's a literature-rich mm-hmm. curriculum. And so, yeah, I enjoy reading the books, the read-alouds, and the history. I'm learning a lot along with the boys.
Isn't that fascinating? Usually with homeschool, you don't have to be a scholar in every subject to be a homeschool parent, to be a home educator. You get to learn along the way as you're teaching, which is nice. Well, so you spend a good portion of the day probably then in studies in homeschool.
Well, actually not. We usually spend anywhere between 2 to 3 hours in school, and that's it. Because we don't have a lot of other students that I have to keep track of,
sure.
or anything, you know, there's no long lines. We're not waiting for other people to finish what they're doing so that we can go ahead. I set the things out mm-hmm. for the boys to accomplish. And when they're done with one thing, they move on to another, and they ask questions of me as they need. But otherwise, we just keep moving along and get done fairly quick.
And then what happens when we're done with studies for the day?
Well, then you usually have lunch, and then they are free to go do whatever they want to do.
And how do you spend? Now, I know Legos comes to mind. You said Legos earlier, right? What else do you like to do for fun and for free time, Aaron? What do you do once you're done with studies for the morning and lunchtime? You have free time. What do you do for fun?
Read.
Uh-huh.
Play in the trees.
Read and play in the trees? Very good. Andrew, how about you? Once you're done with your studies and lunchtime is over, what do you like to do for fun?
Read and hike around in the bush.
And play around in the bush?
Yeah.
Yeah? Very good. Well, it sounds like Mom likes to encourage reading, and that's a good thing. Of course, encourage reading and the playing around outside, climbing trees and playing around in the bush. Now, Dad, do you get to play around? Do you get to climb, go out and climb trees too and play around in the bush?
For 1 hour every afternoon, I have time with the boys. I mean, that's in my schedule is to 1 hour every afternoon, late in the afternoon, that's what we do. And so, yeah, depending on what they want to do that day, we'll either be hiking through the bush, going on explorers, going to a new campsite that they've just hacked out of the bush. And we do other things like play cricket and baseball, and depending on what they want to do that day.
Have you gotten to know others in the village and made any friends in the community? I know you're out in the bush a little more now. Have you gotten to know any of the people around you?
Two.
Two? Yeah? Made some friends?
Yeah.
How about you, Andrew? Have you made some friends in the area?
Two.
Two friends? Yeah? You guys have... Are they the same friends?
Yeah.
Yeah? Where did you meet your friends?
On the farm with us.
On the farm? Yeah? How do you get to... Do you get to meet other families? Do you get to spend time with other families? Do you get to worship with other families?
On Sunday mornings, I lead kind of like an informal Bible study for basically the expats who are Afrikaners by and large, or there's one guy who's a Zimbabwe refugee. And so we come together every Sunday morning and we work through a book of the Bible over a period of weeks or months. And yeah, it's a time for families to get together. There's one other family with smaller children, but the rest of them are older people.
And so you have this chance for the mutual consolation of the brethren and encouragement and getting to study God's word together, after spending all week long studying God's word. But I'm sure it's encouraging as a family to have that opportunity as well. Where do we go from here? What is you're going back to Botswana later on to continue working on the project and then. Possibly, perhaps, maybe completing it by 2017. What do you boys hope to do? Are you thinking about what you might like to do as you grow older? What type of maybe work you might like to do?
Live in Alaska.
Live in Alaska? A little bit colder there?
Yeah.
Andrew, any career that you might have your eye on? What do you like to do?
Probably chemistry or biology.
Chemistry or biology, like the sciences. Well, I think that based on what you've expressed today, that that's probably a good path for you. It sounds like you really enjoy it. Well, anything else that you'd like to share with us as we're wrapping up our story and our conversation today, talking about your life serving as a missionary family in Botswana with Lutheran Bible Translators? What would you say to someone who is considering mission work, whether it be as Lutheran Bible translators or another type of mission work, who maybe they're single or maybe they're married, maybe they have children, they're thinking about this, but not really sure if it's for them? Any advice that you might offer them?
I would say, you know, don't be afraid to try it. There are going to be challenges, but they're going to be challenges whether you're living, you know, here or abroad. The challenges just take a different face when you're abroad. Mm-hmm. And you learn to trust in God so much more when you're kind of like out of your comfort zone, you know, out of your community, basically on your own, but God is with you.
Lisa, any Any advice you'd share with someone thinking about mission work?
Well, mission work and mission stories often sound pretty exotic and exciting and out of the ordinary. But really, 95% of what a missionary does is what people here in the States do. It's just normal, everyday living. You might have a few nuances, but really, it's really just pretty much the same everywhere.
We're just living the Christian life. We're living right. The life that God has given us, living in the places he's placed us, with the exception of having to drive 5 hours away to get groceries. Which some have to do that here too.
Yeah, exactly.
with a few exceptions. Well, I certainly have enjoyed hearing your story, and I know that our listeners always enjoy hearing from our missionaries as well. And I want to thank you all for taking time in your schedule back here in the States to talk with us and share your story with us, with me and with our listeners today. Thanks so much for taking that time. The Reverend Tim Beckendorf, thanks so much for being our guest today.
Our pleasure.
And Mrs. Beckendorf, Lisa Beckendorf, thanks for being our guest today.
Thank you.
And Aaron and Andrew, thanks for being our guest and coming in and spending some time in the studio here.
Thank you.
You bet. You can find out more about these missionaries, Lutheran Bible Translators, at lbt.org. You can find the page on the Beckendorf family right there. If you go to missionaries on the LBT website, you can see their picture and find out more all about them. We'll link to it as well. With the archive of today's program on our website, we'll provide a link to Lutheran Bible Translators so that folks can find out more about the Beckendorf family and how they can support Lutheran Bible Translators as well. Thanks so much for being our guest today. Coming up, we've got more great programming. Stick around for more here on Worldwide KFU.
Listen to Faith and Family Monday through Friday at this time. Faith and Family is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is needed for Faith and Family to continue. Our address is 1333 South Kirkwood Road, St. Louis, Missouri, 63122. You can contact us on the web and download Faith and Family at KFUO.org. Worldwide KFUO, on the air, online, and on demand.